The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
We still have a couple hours to go. We thank you for being with us, and let's get right back to the calls. And Larry is up next. Larry, there?
Here, old Joe back. That's good. That's good. I like Joe. Hey, check it out. I won a Bear Bryant football at Crystal one time, and he signed it with all the players in the 79 Sugar Bowl. And I put in like 400 entries.
Yeah.
It was at Crystal's. Yeah, I wanted that ball.
Now let me. So, are we talking about Crystal like hamburgers?
Hamburger. Yeah.
I used to really like
Crystal.
Did you like Crystals?
Yeah. Yes.
Even though I worked at McDonald's briefly, I always thought Crystals were better hamburgers.
Yeah, back when they first was going on, when I went to Woodlawn High School, they were awesome. But then they got kind of downhill. But I had the workers that I had working for me. I had about five or six doing sheetrock. And I would get them to fill out the entry form because it said enter as many times as you want. And so I won it. And the woman there that worked there, she was trying to win it. And so she got mad when I won it and they called my name. She said, "That's not right. He's put in entries every day." And the guy's manager said, "Well, it says entertainment you won't." And so she said, "Draw it again and see what happens." He drew my name three times in a row. I won that, but I still got it, man.
So, okay, so and it's a Sugar Bowl signed football?
Yeah, 79 okay. Sugar Bowl.
Was that the game against Penn State?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I've been offered $5,000, but I wouldn't take it.
I will offer you. I've got a signed one from the
67.
Okay.
What?
This is.
Yeah,
which one is that? I'm trying to. That's 67. Yeah, I've got one at home from either. I think the 15 or. Larry, $5,000. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I will make you an offer right now to take that off your hands.
How much?
$5.
Well, you can get an ass whipping if you offer me $5, and I would face to face with you. That's an insult.
That's as high as I'm going for a 44-year-old football.
Yeah. You got that right. But I come home, my little boy was out in the yard kicking it around, playing with it, man. I like to have a stroke. But I want to ask you something real quick. Why are you covering up for LSU, Feinbaum?
Why am I covering up for LSU?
What's that little guy's name and the coach's form? What's that little fella's name?
The one they have now?
The coach for LSU. What's his name?
Brian Kelly?
Anyway, yeah. He had the five of his recruiting coaches, five of them.
I haven't heard that.
They was all partying down.
I understand you correctly. You're talking about Brian Kelly, the guy that beat you in overtime this year in Alabama, in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, that man legend, hey. Yeah, that's him.
Okay.
I may be the most clueless
guy in the world, but I haven't heard anything about this story. So you need
that's
to.
Right. Yeah, you have. Don't tell me, Paul Feinbaum. And I'm going to tell you something else. You've heard it. And they was four guys and a girl, and they were recruiting coaches. And they all partying down and
Larry, have you heard anything about this, Randy?
No.
Anybody else? Nobody here has heard that.
Yeah. You need to keep.
And I would dare say, Larry, collectively, we're fairly well plugged in. I mean, our entire crew here, we keep up with stuff. We don't just
you need. What
we don't just
need,
go to the package store for a six-pack and hear something behind the counter and then report it on the Feinbaum show.
Them guys don't know nothing in there. I'm the man. You just want to know something, you ask Larry.
Okay, Larry, hey, before you go, I'm going to make amends. I'm sorry. I apologize for offering you $5, okay?
That's right. Everybody in the world will be mad at your ass. But
okay, Larry, I'm my final offer.
Be careful.
I will offer you $10 for that Sugar Bowl football.
Oh, it's on now. You know, I bet.
Five down and five when I get it. I want to get it on layaway, okay?
If you had a funeral, I bet there wouldn't be no more cars than a McDonald's drive-through.
Oh, I don't know, Larry. There's always a theory on funeral that some people just want to show up to make sure it's real.
Yeah, you're right.
You think I'd have a decent funeral, Randy?
I think you have.
Who do you think? I know this sounds maudlin there, but Larry, I was thinking if somehow I died, which I'll spare you the cliches about not knowing what tomorrow brings, but I would like you to be one of the speakers at the funeral.
Well, you can bet your ass I will be if I'm alive, brother. Because you better be one at mine. I don't care how bad
Are you kidding? I mean, Larry, I'm not even going to ask. I'll be there.
Well, man, I love you, brother. You know what? I hate that ties us together, but we've been the one that really, really brought us together.
It did.
You remember.
And Larry, by the way, do you mind at your funeral if I drink a six-pack while I'm doing the eulogy?
Oh, hell no, man. Spread it around. I want it. Hell yeah.
That would be.
Man, anybody have a good time pissing.
Give me one more there before I finish this eulogy.
Yeah, there's not one more out there.
Yeah, I mean, I got drool coming down the side of my mouth. My tie's askew. And that guy, Larry, what was his name again? And then fall over, and you know the whole thing just crashes down. We're back with much more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back, and we have mentioned it, and it is worth mentioning often about the big game in Knoxville tonight. We had Coach Harper on yesterday, Andrea Carter, part of the coverage tonight on College Game Day. Of course, knows the territory quite well. Andrea Carter joining us from Knoxville. Andrea, thank you very much. Before we get to the game, and I do want to talk about that, you signed at Tennessee under Pat Summitt, and everyone is remembering her on this very special week. Take us back to your encounters with her early on.
Wow, that was amazing, Paul. I remember my first time talking to her, I was in ninth grade. It was on the phone. I was in tears because it's Pat Summitt. And the very first thing I said, "Hey, Coach Summitt." And she said, "Hey, player Andrea, you can call me Pat." And so just immediately leveled the playing field for me. And that's really who Pat was. You know, I've talked to so many people, especially this week. You know her greatness, you know her intensity. But for me personally, I felt so much love and care and humility from Pat. And I think that's what sticks with me the most. You know, she's amazing, a great coach, but I really felt like, even as a ninth grader, all the way up through my career, from when she called me personally to tell me about her diagnosis, from when I had to call her and tell her I tore my ACL, there are so many things that happened that I will remember feeling love from her. So it was an honor to be the last class to sign with Pat on my national letter of intent. It means a lot.
And Andrea, I know it's tough to think about what she told you, but at that moment in time, what was it like as a young person to try to process that with all, and also understand, you know, the fact that she was letting you know that? It almost feels awkward asking about it, but describe that moment in time for you and especially for her.
It was hard. It was really hard to process, Paul. You know, I committed to Tennessee as a sophomore in high school. So I was one that I had three schools that I thought I wanted to go to. It was Tennessee, it was Connecticut, and it was Georgia. And when I decided I didn't want to go far from home, you know, that nixed Connecticut. And if it was the SEC, it was going to be Tennessee. That was my dream school. And so in 10th grade, I called Pat and told her I was going to accept the scholarship and play for her. And when she called and told me, I remember calling my dad. And he said, "You're either in or you're out. You shouldn't have to think about it. Don't. If you have to think about it, that means you're out." And I was like, "No, I'm in. It doesn't matter. That's where I want to go." And so I had a lot of people around me that helped me with that. And once I didn't think twice about it, once I made the decision, I was all in. But it was hard. It was an emotional conversation, and I still felt very honored at the time that she would call me. I was just like, "There, you have so much going on," and she was. I remember her talking very slowly. I remember her saying, "This is not easy. This is not going to be easy for anyone. And I just want to let you know." And I remember her telling me that she would fight as long as she could and that she still hoped that I would want to be a part of the program. And it was hard, but it was really special that she called me to tell me, because you know, when you've got that much going on, you could send an SID, you could have an assistant have that conversation, but she took the time to tell me, so it meant a lot.
Andrea, on the other side of that, as we look ahead to Connecticut tonight, so you know that part of the puzzle as well, being a major recruit and almost considering them. How would you describe Connecticut at that moment in time and what they have meant to everything that involves college basketball? We know the numbers; they're unbelievable. But describe your thoughts on Connecticut and their place in college basketball history.
I had so much respect for Connecticut. I was very close to some of the assistants on the staff at the time, and I grew up in Georgia, so I went to Maya Moore's high school basketball games, and I followed her career very, very much all the time. I had clippings of her. Newspaper articles in my room. So when you thought about Connecticut, you thought about greatness. And growing up, I watched Tennessee and Connecticut go at it and have battles. And you think of this rivalry, it really grew the game of basketball. And you think of what Geno has done at Connecticut, grew the game of basketball as well. Like, Paul, I don't know if you remember the time where at one point, it might have been when they won three in a row or four in a row, and people were saying that it was bad for women's basketball. And now, you see competitiveness and parity across the nation. There's not just one team at the top. There are teams competing across the board. I think the greatness that was once amongst maybe one, two, or three teams has sparked a fire in other programs. And now you see teams having their pick of the litter in terms of where they want to go to school and be great? Do you want to play in this conference? Do you want to be up north? Do you want to stay close to home? You have options now as a recruit, like legitimate options to be on a team and make it to a Final Four. But it wasn't always that way. I think that what Pat did, what Gino did, the success that they had and the great programs. Now, how many great programs do we see? South Carolina is the greatest, in my opinion, right now. And where did that come from? And what set the example for that standard? I think that was one of the first times that we really saw a consistent standard of greatness throughout years. So I'm very, very happy to now cover Connecticut, but witness those great teams. It was really fun to watch the way they played the game. Was really great. So I always give a lot of credit to Gino for what he's done.
Andrea Carter live from Knoxville as she gets ready with game day tonight. Thanks so much, Andrea. We appreciate it. We'll be watching you later that game tonight, 8 o'clock on ESPN. Let's get back to the calls. And Mitch is up next in Ohio. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, how are we doing, Paul?
We're doing great.
There's a dollar for you. There's a dollar.
I need it.
I wanted to talk about another coach that's had health problems and had to retire a few years ago. He had to follow Osborne at Nebraska. I believe it was Solich. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Went 10-3, beat Tennessee in a bowl game, got fired. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, he basically won 10 games a year, but that wasn't enough because Nebraska thought every coach would be what Tom Osborne and Bob Devaney was. And he eventually left, had a huge career in the MAC. Saw him a couple of years ago. I was emceeing a banquet, and he was there, and just a nice man who was treated very shabbily by a woebegotten fan base who may never get it right.
And then he goes to a little school and takes his coordinators with him, including Joe Burrow's dad.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And takes a program that was nothing and something.
Well, he probably was better off because to deal with the crazies that are the Nebraska fan base would have probably driven anyone crazy. Thanks so much for the call. Great to have you on. How about Lee in Virginia? Hello, Lee. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you.
I just had a memory about Coach Bear that I'd like to share with you. Many, many years ago, he started a television commercial for the telephone company. I guess it was Bell Telephone back then. And he said that the first thing he made his players do when they got to Alabama was call home and talk to their mamas. And he said, "Have you called your mama today? I sure wish I could call mine."
Lee, that was for South Central Bell, which was part of Bell South at the time before the government broke up all the phone companies. And a friend of mine was part of the group that put that spot together. And
yes.
You just had to, it's something that people could find easily now, but you had to be there when Coach Bryant looked into that camera and said, "Have you called your mama today? I sure wish I could call mine." I mean, my friend John Forney was part of he and Bob Luckey's group put that together. And it was one of the most priceless television commercials I think that's ever been done.
I do, too. I think so, too.
Well, I appreciate you reminding me. There's so many great memories of Coach Bryant, some that you can tell and some you can't. that's what made him so unique. And I know we'll talk to somebody a little bit later who did a book on Coach Bryant, where a lot of those stories are told. But there are always new ones, even 40 years later. Larry is in Mississippi. Larry, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Glad to hear from you.
Hey, Paul. I got a couple of stories about Bear Bryant. I'm a retired AT&T employee, and back early in my career, and you may help me out on this, we did some training in an old hotel. I think it was the Roosevelt Hotel. I think it was on First Avenue. Anyway, apparently the telephone company had rented what used to be a restaurant right in the front of the hotel. And so people could walk by and see us do our training. And one afternoon when we finished our training, we were walking out and looked into the bar. And, oh, wow, there sat Bear Bryant and the Auburn coach.
Coach Jordan.
And who?
Shug Jordan.
Yeah. And they were having an adult beverage. And I thought that was odd at the time, you know, because they seemed to like to be like bitter enemies, you know. And there they sat, you know, having an adult beverage together. And the other story is my two sons are big Auburn fans. And get this, they respect my being an Alabama fan and a big Bear Bryant fan, and they gave me a lithograph. It was an artist rendition of Bear Bryant. It was done by Robert Hollingsworth.
Right.
This was a limited edition, and it's on 100% acid-free paper using fade-resistant inks. And the printing of this lithograph was January the 26th. 1993, the 10th anniversary of Coach Bryant's death, and all the plates have been destroyed. And I have this in my office. I see Bear every day with his houndtooth cap on, and I've always been a big fan of his, and was glad that I was able to see a few games that he was very successful in. And I kudos to you for honoring Bear Bryant on this January the 26th.
Larry, thank you. Thank you very much. There was one story I'll tell. My favorite person to talk to about Coach Bryant was always Pat Dye. And I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, a little bit longer, David Upton, who runs Crane Works in Birmingham, he was the sponsor of the Pat Dye segment on our show. And Dye was upset with me, which happened all the time. And David wanted us to get together and figure it out, which we did. We went down to see Coach Dye. And the two of us, or three of us, I guess, were sitting on his porch. And I said, we were talking about the Bryant days, and he told me a recruiting story. He spent, 10 years as one of Coach Bryant's assistants. And he went to see some kid in North Alabama, and the night before National Signing Day, or maybe two nights before, he got back, and Coach Bryant called me and said, what about that linebacker, like top player in the state? And he said, well, we can't get him, Coach. He said, what do you mean you can't get him? He said, He's not coming here. He said, I did everything I could. And I'll leave this for your imagination. But Bryant stood up and said, you get your blank and blank back up there and get that young man. And I asked Coach Dye, I said, did you get him? He said, oh, yeah, we got him. I said, well, how'd you get him? He said, I'm not telling. I said, Pat, this was now 30 years. I said, it's been 30 years since the man died. He said, I'm still not talking about it. That's the genius of Coach Bryant. I've never heard a single Bryant player ever say anything about him that would bring disrepute to his name to this day. And I have interviewed hundreds of them. That, to me, is what stands him apart from any coach. And I'm not naming names, but you could go up and down the rosters of today's coaches, and it is not difficult to get people to say things, oftentimes while they're still there, but certainly after they leave. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Welcome back as we continue here on a Thursday afternoon. Russ is up next. Man, I had a feeling I'd be hearing from you today, Russ.
Absolutely, Paul. I'm sitting in Legion Field. You said we were going to do it from the end zones and the old steel bleachers that we were talking 40 years ago about 1 o'clock today.
Yeah, I've told the story before, but I'm gonna let Russ figure it out. Russ was an outstanding defensive player at Alabama on Coach Bryant's last team. He was trying out for the Birmingham Stallions. I know they're back again, but 1983 they were about to go to camp for their first USFL season. A bunch of Alabama and Auburn players were at Legion Field in Birmingham on January 26, 1983. And I got out there and I was sitting with a notebook out talking to Russ Wood when I'll let you pick up the story, Russ.
Yeah, we were we just had a little warm-up, and they had the territorial draft. So there was about 10 or 12 of us, Alabama, I think a couple Auburn guys. I know the quarterback from Southern Miss was there, the territory. But, me and you were talking. You were asking some questions, and the sports information director came running up to where we were sitting, I remember. And he said, guys, did y'all hear? And you know, I think we kind of ignored him, and he said, Coach Bryant just passed. And of course, he got everybody's attention right away. And, nobody had cell phones, not even Paul back then. And I remember we followed you out to that first payphone right down the street from Legion Field, and you had to call the office, and you had to go cover that story. But,
Russ, I can't remember how far – it wasn't that far out. We literally went out the tunnel, and
in the like the breezeway, Paul.
Yeah,
remember back
yeah, it wasn't far at all, and I don't remember what a phone call cost in 1983, but I'm glad I had the change.
Quarter,
okay.
A quarter. And my old boss used to say, "Don't." Boss used to tell me, "Don't leave home without a pen to write an order and a quarter." When we had pagers back then.
So I mean, I know what I did after that. I went back to the newspaper. What did you guys do?
Pretty much, a lot of us just, we started calling back to Tuscaloosa and trying to get, and then, of course, he had the service, just a couple of days
right.
later. It was pretty quick, and most of us didn't know really what to do. And then, Riley Dotch brought in all the NFL guys. I think 90% of all the local players that they broadcast they were going to use in the USFL, we all got terminated on the – I think that whatever day that was, that Sunday,
right.
They let, I remember seeing Tom Banks and John, the backup to Terry Bradshaw and all these guys
Cliff
in the
Stout,
hotel.
Yeah.
Cliff Stout. All those guys came walking in the same hotel, and Jeff Fagan, one of my teammates and great running backs we had, came and said, we've all been cut. And I said, no way. We've been in shorts. We hadn't even gotten pads. And sure enough, 90% of us, they all went to Tampa to the camp, and all of us went back to Tuscaloosa to prepare for the funeral.
That's amazing. No, it's in terms of the funeral, Russ, as part of his last group of players, responsibility might be too strong a word, but what were you guys part of? Tell us a little bit more about it.
Right. The team was honorary pallbearers.
Okay.
And they had, I think they had four churches that held the service, the main Methodist church in Tuscaloosa. I remember Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler.
Oh, yeah. They were all
there. Word was that Billy Graham was actually supposed to do the service, but him and Coach Bryant were good friends, but he was sick, and he couldn't do it.
Oh, okay.
And we all sat kind of on the front part of the church, and the dignitaries, like, you know, the Woody Hayes sat behind us, and family, of course. And, you know, just it was just, you know, we're part of it, and then we had the bus ride to Birmingham. And I guess the number one question I get asked all the time is why he wasn't buried in Tuscaloosa. And I really don't have an answer for that.
I may be able to help you on that. I believe I did check out that many years ago, and I believe Mrs. Bryant's family had a plot at Elmwood Cemetery, and that's the reason why that happened. I think that's right. I'm relying on 40 years of memory.
Yeah. Right. I believe you're right. And I mean, I get asked that, and, you know, how great it would have been, you know, like Elvis in Memphis right there close to Graceland and, you know, all that, you know, but he had family, and I knew he had family, and, you know, it was a reason it was in Birmingham, you know,
Russ, I think of all the, and again, I was at the very back of that procession, so I didn't see all the things I saw most of what you saw, but the drama of that day really was that procession, that's 55-mile trip where, you know, the estimates of 500,000 to 1 million people were on the side of the road.
Yeah, I mean, when we went down what is now Bryant Drive from the church, and, you know, we were going probably less than 10 miles an hour, and to see the people lined up, and then on the interstate, every overpass was full of people, and it was just, you know, I've seen some of the big, you know, I was a big Elvis fan and watched his, you know, passing and the big, you know, parades he had, but to be in that bus that day was, I don't think there was a word said. I can't remember talking to even the guy sitting next to me.
Yeah, no, I happened to be in Memphis the day Elvis died, and it wasn't quite to the degree, because you didn't have the procession. The procession made that into an indelible moment that people still talk about 40 years later. In terms of being on Coach Bryant's last team, so much was made about the struggles that year. Did you detect anything, Russ, as being one of the senior leaders?
No, not really. You know, we beat Penn State fifth game of the season, went to number one, 2-1 poll. We had a couple of injuries, lost a real close game to Tennessee the next week, you know, and Tennessee was, a lot of people don't realize, Coach Bryant said Auburn's that other team. Tennessee's our rival. Rocky Top, you know, we played there in practice. I mean, he really took offense to losing that game. And then when we lost to LSU in a close, you know, 20-10 game, and then when we lost to Southern Miss, after going from number one in the country, we had 17 of us started as juniors. So we were kind of loaded. But we had some injuries, and after the Southern Miss game, there was a total difference in the way he went about practice. And we kind of saw something, but didn't realize it, what was coming. So, but the first of the year, he was as feisty. He used to walk a couple of laps around the track, around our practice field, you know, before practice, and very energetic, and, you know, getting out there pushing guys. I mean, probably get sued nowadays, what he used to do to us. But
that's really funny. Back then he had, they used to let the media in the practice. I mean, he had a tower. He watched did you have to go up to the tower if he wanted to talk to you? How'd that work?
Oh, no. The worst, and may he rest in peace, Sang Lida, who was a trainer under Coach Jim Goostrey. But Sang was there forever. He was the number two man under Coach Goostrey, and we always joked he was going to write a book one time. And what in that tower, when you went up the spiral staircase, I only went up there a couple of times, mostly time when he wasn't there. But we'd sneak in there and just go up there and act like we owned it. But there's a chain at the top of it, and you're doing, 60, 70, 80 guys during practice, you know, two or three different locations. And the worst thing you ever wanted to hear was when that chain hit the side of that pole, the little ping. and the whole place, the whole practice went numb, because that meant he's coming out of the tower. If he came out of the tower, he was upset.
Russ, that's some amazing stories. I've talked to you. We've talked so many times over these years, and I can't tell you how much I learn every time we talk. And I hope we can hang on a few more years, Russ, and continue this.
Oh, absolutely. As long as, like I said, we joked about going and doing the show one day, and maybe we can do that. I don't even know if Legion Field's still there. I know last time I went there.
Yeah, no, it's still there. Well, I'll tell you what. This is what, 126-23. On 126-33, we'll do the show from there, okay?
You got it. You know, we can, and I can gather up some of the same guys that are in the stands with us, and hopefully we've lost a couple of teammates. May they rest in peace over the years, and more than we'd like. But, hopefully, God willing, we'll be blessed. And as long as we're walking above ground and, we can call a roll tide, we're in good shape.
Russ, thank you very much. Russ Wood, who was an All-American defensive player at Alabama. I did check with a friend, and Mrs. Bryant, Mary Harmon Bryant, apparently someone in her family had the plot at Elmwood Cemetery, and that's how it ended up being, that Coach Bryant was buried there. People still go. In fact, I heard from Rick Carley today. He went out to the grave sites. People are still leaving flowers. I can't tell you how many times I've taken somebody out to find the plot where Coach Bryant is buried. We will take a short break. Coming right back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And welcome back here on this Thursday. Big Al is up next. Hello, Al.
Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
How you doing? I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments, on the Bear Bryant that everybody's talking about. I'm a big Bama fan. Go back from the 60s and been through the good, the bad, and the ugly. But I was going to tell you, and you probably was at that game, the last game that Bear Bryant coached at Bryant Denny was, Southern Mississippi.
Yes.
And they had there. Reggie Collier as a quarterback, and I think he must have run for 200 yards up the middle. But that day, and then the last game was at Legion Field and then the Liberty Bowl. Well, I was going to tell you, I got a standing ovation at that game at Bryant Denny Stadium. It was Veterans Day weekend. And they had all the veterans stand up. And I was a veteran, a Marine Corps veteran of Vietnam. And we all got to stand up. And everybody gave us an ovation. But little did we know that'd be the last game that Bear Bryant would be at. Because nobody knew that. And I retired as an engineer on the CSX Evelyn Railroad. And the day he died, I was going on a train from Mobile to New Orleans. And I was coming through Pascagoula, Mississippi, and the dispatcher was a friend of mine. He was a big Bama fan. He called me and told me about Bear Bryant passing, and it was a sad rest of the trip to New Orleans. But I'm just going to let you know that little bit of information, I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you very much. By the way, that game in Tuscaloosa, that performance by Reggie Collier was maybe one of the greatest I've ever seen. And it was the, that game was in 82. I believe that's the first time Alabama had lost at Bryant Denny Stadium since the mid-60s.
It was. It definitely was. It had that long streak. And it was, I mean, every time you looked up, I mean, and he would just run straight through the middle like a quarterback.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, at that moment, you knew something was terribly wrong. And thanks for the call, and thank you for what you said there. But it had come apart. It's just the irony, though, of, you know, everything going so well, and then what happened? A loss at Knoxville, ending a long streak, rushing the field, taking the goalposts out, dumping them in the river, and then 2 weeks later, losing to LSU.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.